Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome along to Thursday's football show. So after the humiliation of the Nations League, we turn our attention to the Euro 2020 qualification proper. It all starts for Mick McCarthy and the Republic of Ireland in Gibraltar on Saturday evening at 5 o'clock kickoff for that game. I will have updates throughout the day and the evening on especially extended Off the Ball on Saturday. And then live commentary to come from the Viva on Tuesday night of the Republic of Ireland against Georgia. We'll be alongside Stephen Ward for that one. But it's all getting underway already this evening in the Euro 2020 qualifiers. Northern Ireland amongst the teams currently in action. They are 1-0 up against Estonia with over an hour gone in the game at Windsor Park. Niall McGinn with the goal 10 minutes into the second half, giving Michael O'Neill's side a 1-0 lead against Estonia. In the other game in Group C, the Netherlands with a central defensive partnership of Matthijs de Ligt and Virgil van Dijk are 3-0 up at home against Belarus. In Group E, it's 1-1 between Croatia and Azerbaijan. Slovakia 1-0 up against Hungary. In Group G, no goals between Austria and Poland. Macedonia 2 up against Latvia, and it's 1-1 between Israel and Slovenia. And in Group I, Cyprus 5-0 winners over San Marino. Belgium currently 2-1 up at home against Russia. But the standout scoreline really from the qualifiers today came in Kazakhstan, where Kazakhstan beat Scotland by 3-0. Kazakhstan ranked well outside the top 100 in the world rankings. Only 3 wins in their previous 40 competitive games, but they were 2-0 up inside 10 minutes, went on to add a third in the second half, and a difficult, difficult night for Alec McLeish. Pat Nevin. Is there a slower, more downbeat version of the music?
I don't know if we deserve that music.
I don't think so. The words like humiliation, embarrassment all over the headlines. Is it that?
Yeah, I think so. Just looking at the team that Scotland put out. Now, any team can have a bad day. That can happen, and they did. They had a bad day. The players that they expected to do well didn't have the greatest games. The likes of McGinn, who, you know, has done well with Villa. When he's played little bits for Scotland, he's generally been okay, very lively. McGregor, Armstrong. I mean, that's a strong-looking midfield that you've got there. Forrest has been really good for Celtic as well. So you're thinking about that, thinking that should be good enough. The capabilities of McBurnie and Burke as attacking players, you know, physically they look right. But we know from history for Scotland that they don't do it all the time. But for all that, the back line of Palmer, Bates, McKenna and Shinney. And you're saying to me, who?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Graham Shinney is the one, I guess, that's come in for a lot of stick, yeah, because the first two goals inside the opening 10 minutes both came down his side. And this is where you feel some sympathy for Alec McLeish, because he is probably the two best young left-backs in British football in Kieran Tierney and Andy Robertson, and neither of them are available.
Exactly. So that made a massive difference to him. There was quite a few other call-offs as well. Anyone who doesn't know about it, Kazakhstan team play on a plastic pitch. So there are a good number of players who basically can't play on it, and said they couldn't play. The clubs wouldn't let them play. So it was a make-doing men defence that was put in there. And, 10 minutes in and they're 2-0 down and they're in great trouble anyway. If I'm going to try and make an excuse, and I don't feel this, but I'll try playing on those plastic surfaces is a joke anyway. The worst games that I was involved in my Scotland's career, and there weren't that many of them, usually it was in a stinker of a pitch. I remember one against Luxembourg where, you know, it was about 2-3 inches of grass, maybe more than that, under a rock hard bobbly surface, and you couldn't run with the ball. So sometimes the surface can make a difference as well. But even so, you should be able to be structured and organised enough to make yourself hard to beat. And Scotland just weren't up for it. Now and again, we've had utter, complete stinkers, and this was one of them. Against the Kazakhstan side, they're well outside the top 100. You know, 117, I think, in the world. And if you get, a fluky, unfortunate 1-0 defeat, then you almost kind of take it in the chin, and it's embarrassing. But 3-0... and to be second best all over the place, which it was really, really hard to take for Scotland. So the next question, almost certainly for most, will be, well, is Alec McLeish, is he partially to blame for it? But you're right. He's probably put out the best group of players that's available to him, with the one exception of, could he have gone for some older players who are kind of not considered at the moment, brought them back in, you know, for that bit of security of, you know, they know the way around the international scene. Yeah. There was a lot of players that hadn't played many international games tonight. But you stand by the results and by the decisions you make. And to be fair, that's a shocker of an absolute shocker of a result for a country that's been struggling for a long, long time.
Just on the plastic pitch side of it, because it's something we'll have to make do with as well over in Gibraltar on Saturday. And I know it's certainly a consideration when it comes to somebody like Shaunie Maguire as to whether or not he can play in that game and then maybe go out against Georgia here at the Aviva on Tuesday night. Do lots of the teams in the Scottish Premier League not play on these 4G pitches?
They do. There's quite a few. Kilmarnock have got the 4G pitch. Actually, I was walking on it yesterday, of all times. I was up meeting Stevie Clark. Lots of people shout for Stevie Clark to be the next Scotland manager as we speak just now. So it's there, and it has been for quite some time. But I have to tell you, there's a lot of players in Scotland that they're left out for that game because when they play it, they're injured or are unable for a week or two afterwards. And any injury, it's a slight injury for those sorts of players, becomes, you know, a chronic injury that's out for a while. So some of them won't play in it anyway, but B, you're right. You should then be able to understand the different technique of having to play in that pitch. And it's a totally and utterly different technique. So don't go out and try and play your normal game on it, because if you do that, you won't be successful. You adapt your game to it. Scotland weren't able to as a group. Now, some of the players are not used to it. Some of them play, you know, down south much more often. And you play once or twice away from home if you're the likes of McGregor, etc.
Yeah.
But yeah, the manager's got to look at a team and put a team out that's structured to cope with that.
And if Scotland are doing well, and if Alex McLeish is making a really good impression in these early months, do you think somebody like Ryan Fraser does turn up for this game? Is there partly an excuse culture sort of built in now to the Scottish national team that certain players just don't want to be part of it?
Well, that was always the case, I'm afraid. even in the time when I was playing, there was quite a few players that they picked and chose their games, you know, the ones that would suit them. And if there's a massive long hike out to Kazakhstan and a massive long hike back with the possibility of A, a bad surface, or B, you know, a possible bad result. You know, I remember times when certain players wouldn't play and their managers didn't want them to play. Scotland's no different from the likes of Wales. I'm sure it's happened with Ireland as well.
Well, I was just wondering that because, like, Ryan Fraser's obviously having a brilliant season at Bournemouth and is such a talent for Scotland. And if a player of his ability refused to play for the Republic of Ireland because of the surface and his club was allowed to dictate that he wouldn't play, I think there'd be an absolute outcry from the supporters and people would turn on them probably pretty quickly. Like, is it that in Scotland that Celtic and Rangers just dominates everything and people just sort of give and take the national team?
We're a bit more used to it because there aren't that many synthetic pitches up in Scotland, and now we have knowledge of the players who can and can't cope with it. Those players just are left out, you know, and it's almost a right, we accept that. There's no point in playing him there because he won't play for the next 2 or 3 weeks, and that's grossly unfair to the clubs that pay his wages. So there's a kind of a bit of an acceptance there. It's all very well for people like me. I didn't have a problem. I hate them anyway. I hate the fact that they're allowed at any level of top level football, be it Scottish Premier League or international football. Sometimes the odd Champions League games had them as well. I mean, to this day, I've never seen an enjoyable game of football at the top level on a plastic pitch. I just don't think it's good football. But so what? You just need to deal with it. But I think one of the grown-up things a wee bit in Scotland is a lot of people do understand that, you know, I think Ryan Fraser's turned up for just about every game. You know, I don't think it's the travelling. I think it's that pitch that could wreck me. And if he did some sort of damage that damaged them for the rest of the season, well, that's grossly unfair.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair enough. Again, like a result like this in Ireland would prompt national outrage, and we'd be looking at our underage systems and why we're not creating the right kind of player and why we're not creating the greats of the 80s and the Pat Nevins and the Kenny Dalglishes and these type of players. Does that happen now in Scotland after a result like this?
Yeah, it happens after every result that we get recently. It happens all the time. And it's correct. we're not producing the top quality players. Now, I mentioned that midfielder. Some of them are very good players. I mean, McGinn, I'd say McGregor, you know, Armstrong. Armstrong's playing the Premier League and doing pretty well with a mid to lower league team. Now, but the real star sort of turnouts that you want, and also being able to go through the team and think, well, every one of them is capable of playing at the very top level in either England or Scotland, you know, Celtic and Rangers, etc. That's just not there anymore. It's gone a long distance away for that. Now, asking the question why that number of good players isn't coming through, because I'm looking at McTominay comes on for the bench. McTominay, I watched McTominay over in Paris against PSG. He was absolutely brilliant. He was a colossus. So there's some talent there. But you're right, it's a mix and match. And if you lost two, three, four players, or if you decide, right, get rid of a load of the old guard and bring in a whole new bunch. I mean, just a perfect example is Scotland had been in goal for this one. Of the three goalkeepers, I think they had a combined total of three caps between them. And that's after having goalkeepers that have been great for a long time. So if you bring in a new group, and there, a lot of them have got very, very few caps. And the strikers, none of them have got a goal between them for international level. So you're mixing and matching some guys that are good enough to play at that level. A lot that is a massive step up. Adding top of that, you know, and not playing well. There isn't the strength and depth for top international football. It's not there. There's no point pretending it is. It's been generations since we qualified for anything. That ain't a fluke. That's happening. That has happened. And that's where Scotland are just now. And there's no point. I mean, and the next one you're going to get is, right, you've got to sack Alec McLeish, because I'm sure that would happen in Ireland as well. That's the next thing. You go for sack Alec McLeish. And I'd say, yeah, sack him if you like. Get somebody else in. Just have the same problem. Because I felt about Gordon Strachan, I watched very closely under his reign. Other than a couple of results, a couple of bad games, I think he absolutely maximised the potential of that group there. Didn't qualify, but that didn't matter. For me, all you can do is maximise the potential of the group. He did that. So why get rid of him? And they got rid of him just when it looked, you know, as if it was, you know, there were some really good performances. It was tight with some of the big teams as well. And, you know, you thought, right, you trust that guy, stick with him. But we changed managers so incredibly quickly. And there'll be a massive group of people saying, now get rid of Alec McLeish now. And good luck to the next guy that comes in. He'll look at it and think, what on earth, if he's any good, and if he's got, like, you know, he's in a good job just now, is a good possibility of getting a good job, he's going to look at Scotland and think, well, why should I come in for that? Yeah. Get pilloried for 6 months and get hoofed. Okay, you make a few quid, but suddenly your name is mud again. But in actual fact, I have absolutely no consideration it's the manager's fault. It's not that. It's far deeper than that in Scotland.
This conversation sounds very, very similar to one we were having about 3 months ago here in Ireland. Pat, we're very tight in time. Thanks a lot for taking the call at short notice. A difficult day for Scotland. We'll chat to you again hopefully early next week when we can go into it all in a bit more detail.
I would love to say it was a pleasure.
I'm glad it's just not us for once. All right, Pat Nevin there. He'll be back as always every Monday night. Quick break, and then we'll be joined in the studio by Vinnie Perth.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
All right, you're very welcome back to the Football Show. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by the Dundalk head coach, Vinnie Perth. How are you?
Good, yeah. All is good at the moment.
You were a little bit delayed. You had Richard Dunn in.
Yeah, he came in to watch his training this morning, so he spent the day with us, met a lot of the players, and I think they got a real boost from that. So, and then our chairman is in at the moment, so he introduced the two lads, and he seemed to enjoy his day, actually. He was quite surprised by some of the facilities we had, quite surprised by the standard of training. Yeah. And obviously, me and Richard are close, so he really enjoyed it.
You go way back, do you?
Yeah, we grew up 3-4 doors away from each other. So the two families are, you know, this Irish thing where you're sort of, your cousin is your cousin, but he's not your cousin type of thing. And we used to share bread and milk maybe between houses at different stages. So, yeah, we've been very, very close. And at different stages, you drift apart at different stages. But generally, for the last sort of 20, 25 years, we've kept close. And
he hasn't given you use of the house in the south of France yet?
No, I have been down and I've been on the boat, so I've experienced that. And I hear it talked about quite a lot in this show. So
what's the boat called?
Jeez, I can't even remember now. I'm not
sure. The Miracle of Moscow.
Yeah, I could think of a few other names, but we stick with that. Yeah.
We invited ourselves down once to do a show, and he said definitely 100% come, but nothing's ever come of that, unfortunately.
No, that'd be quite like him. I've turned up once or twice and he hasn't been there as well, so I'd be very careful.
Not to the south of France, I presume.
Yeah, I'd be very careful what you what you agree to with him, yeah.
I'd imagine you've various people coming in and out of the camp over the course of a season and over the course of the last couple of years because people are interested in how Dundalk have managed to achieve what they've achieved. Do you find people are generally surprised at the standard that's there?
Yeah, I think even like this year we've signed a couple of players from outside of Ireland, and I think Sean Murray was sort of, even facility-wise, and we sort of undersell ourselves in League of Ireland in terms of facilities and standards, but Sean would have played 70 times plus in the Championship, and he was sort of taken aback of the level of training, the level of detail, and sort of the hunger within particularly our own group. I can only speak for our group, but he would say it openly, the sort of standard in which they train and the level of intensity they train at, and he wasn't expecting that. So people sort of, and we undersell ourselves as a league, I think, in terms of, we look at, England is the Holy Grail, and you look at, some of our players have gone away to England and some have come back, and, you know, we, for example, we'd have a full-time kit man in with us this year, and when they finish training, they go from the training ground into the gym, and like there's a fresh t-shirt and fresh pair of shorts there. And to people who are playing in League One, League Two, that's not the norm. Like we look at these great big stadiums and big crowds of 8,000-9,000, but it's the other stuff where players aren't as looked after as people think they are. And England and Scotland isn't necessarily the holy grail for these players.
Yeah, I guess the problem within the league is that there's huge differences between the top and the bottom, that isn't the norm either in the League of Ireland, I'd imagine.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, we set out on this sort of, I don't know, a journey's probably too big of a word, but 6.5 years ago, Dundalk were training part-time. And when Stephen and myself, and obviously when Stephen, I really should say, took over, I took over with him, but we were part-time, we were training in the evenings. We didn't have a full-time kit man. We didn't have full-time, you know, strength and conditioning coaches. We didn't have, you know, we had a physio, obviously. So what has it been achieved, and the success that has come over them 6 years has meant the players have been rewarded. And look,
also means the players have no excuses.
Yeah.
When you're starting out, actually, you know, if it's, there's a bit of an amateurish feel, they can act quite amateurish. Whereas now, it sounds like it's a relatively high-performing unit.
Yeah, we built this high-performance centre, but no, excuses, player, like we, as human beings, we'll always look for excuses, but I think it's important to sort of, and to make that point, to stress that, yes, Dundalk have a lot of stuff going for them, but in terms of what we can offer player, and we can bring players from the UK over and say, you know, you're not coming over, it's not, you know, part-time football, it's not sort of a lesser standard. In fact, we think you'll actually train harder with us than you would at your previous club. I wouldn't sort of mention any clubs, but I think people could come out of the SBL for argument's sake, and obviously the SBL has improved over the last sort of 12, 18 months. I think the standard has really increased at that level. But they're coming out of clubs like in the SBL, I think they're probably training at a higher standard, in my opinion, with ourselves, and I would say a couple of other clubs. And like you made the point as that, you know, that's not the case all the way through the league. But to be fair to our players, they've won that on the pitch. They didn't come into that. They've sort of built that. And yes, we have new owners in the club, but the new owners in the club last 12 months, this was built by Stephen, by everybody in the club over the past 6 years and previous owners. So I think I think we have a really high standard up there, but I think other clubs are not that far behind as people think.
Are you very hands-on on the training pitch?
Yeah, I am. Like, I obviously was, I'm a coach, and that's what my background is. And under Stephen, it would have been just, I wouldn't say just the two of us, but it would have been the two of us would have done a lot of the work. And the staff now, and the way football has gone, the staff has got bigger. You know, there's analysts in, there's strength and conditioning coaches in, but I would have been very hands-on, and I would have been sort of done predominantly most of the training under Stephen's sort of guidance. So it would have been the two of us done a lot of that. So
would you have had a very similar outlook?
Yeah, I think we've the same beliefs. Like, and some people ask me what are them beliefs, and they're very difficult to put into words. But I think we've the same beliefs in the sense of free flowing football. And if the other team score four, we'll score five. And I mean, that's the simplest way I can put it to you in terms of, yeah, we'd like to not concede any, but if they do score four, we'll go and get five ourselves. And we have the same beliefs. And I think the modern day coach, the modern day manager, the modern day person is very hands-on. And I mean, I wouldn't put myself in the same sentence in any way, shape or form, but when you look at videos of Guardiola, he's on the pitch, he's very, very much dictating style of play. And I think the modern day coach, that's what he does, and sort of that's the way it's done now.
So obviously a lot of people were wondering at the start of the season how this was going to work out with Dundalk, because you don't have your pro license yet. You're part of this new group with Robbie Keane and Andy Reid and Damien Duff and Jim McGuinness. Weirdly, the pro license, from everything we've heard, is more geared towards the management side of it than the coaching side of it. There's opportunities to go abroad and learn from best practice, I guess, in terms of coaching, but it's more an education in how to manage a club. So when you finish, do you envisage becoming the manager of Dundalk, or do you expect that you will remain as the head coach?
Well, I don't think, look, there's a lot being spoken about that, and there's a lot being written about the sort of the current setup. And I think we've done something different in Dundalk. I don't think it's any secret, if the rules hadn't changed back in October, that I would have been appointed manager. But we've gone down a different route. We've decided to sort of manage the club in a different way. So we've appointed myself as head coach. The club felt that for continuity that I had to be central to everything that was going on in the club going forward. We had to respect the FAI in terms of their license department. And, you know, I hear people saying things like, you know, other clubs just copy and paste on Doc's statement. That's been probably said in this studio about 20, 30 times. But it's not as simple as that. It's anything but. I think you've got to, in John Gill, we hired somebody that had already previously managed the club. He's someone that, even if I had been appointed manager and the rules hadn't changed, I would have brought into the club. So, and it also allows me then, as head coach, to sort of get involved with our under 13s, 15s, 17s and 19s set up. And that's a huge sort of change in League of Ireland clubs. And it needs to be led, and I don't think it can be just a token gesture. So. It's a different setup, but at the same time, it's something that we feel is working. It's something that, if I have my pro license in sort of a year's time, we're not going to change it all of a sudden and ask anybody to leave or all of a sudden change. I think it's a structure that we'll continue to work with.
So who picks the team then?
Well, the team is picked. Everyone has specific roles in our club. Okay, I coach the team. And that allows me sort of on the pitch, you know, be involved in the training setup and everything. We have, John comes in with very clear first team coach roles, and that's his sole focus. And mine is sort of an overall sort of the whole club. And again, but between the whole lot of us, between the players, between everybody in the club, we sort of are all very clear what our roles are, and we continue to build on that, and I think it's been quite successful so far, albeit a couple of results haven't gone away, and apparently it's a disaster because we've drawn two games in the first two games. But I think
that's the pressure of managing a big club.
Yeah. I think things are working for us. We're probably, albeit with a similar start to what we've had last year, but I've been here, this is starting my seventh season, so I sort of like to think I know better than anybody how the team is playing and sort of where they're at. I think they're ahead of where we ever have been before. I think we're in a good position. I certainly feel it's probably the best squad we've ever had as a club. And
so do you have total control of the way the side play, of the tactics?
No, we haven't changed our tactics. That's the word we've always used, is that continuity. It's not a word we use just for a game or to sort of build smoke screens. I think the way we play hasn't changed. I mean, we were sort of criticised in terms of our performance against Sligo Rovers. I mean, if you analyse that game, we've probably created more chances in that game than we have in any other game the last six, seven seasons. the fact is, if we win that 5-1, everyone says Dundalk are back. They are what they continue to do what they are doing. So, I think we're in a good place, and we're not looking to change the way we play. We haven't changed how we play. In fact, we're looking to improve in how we play and probably keep the ball more, create more chances, and score more goals. And I think last year we broke the record of most goals ever scored in League of Ireland history. So that is a target for the group to go and beat that this year. So there's no change of style, or it's just continuing on what we're doing.
How did that week back in November play out for you when we had Martin O'Neill leading the team to Denmark? He gets fired a couple of days later. It looks as though Mick McCarthy's going to get the job on a regular basis. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Stephen Kenny's name is thrown into the mix. Were you down at Stephen O'Donnell's wedding?
Yeah, I was at Stephen O'Donnell's wedding. I probably had a little bit of an inkling that something was happening, more than most. The week before, I'd be lying if I didn't say I hoped Stephen had got the job ahead of Mick at the time, because of my connection to Stephen. I felt it was the right time for him to become the manager. I still do. But it was a strange couple of days. Mm. Obviously, Stephen made that decision early Saturday morning. Stephen O'Donnell's wedding was on the Friday, and he contacted me early Saturday morning and said, "I need to see you, and we need to have a chat." I sort of knew what that meant. It was very clear. I knew what that meant, and I couldn't even say anything to the players at that stage. And unfortunately, by the time I left Stephen O'Donnell's wedding and met with Stephen, literally 5 minutes after myself and Stephen sat down, my phone started beeping because the news had broken within that period. So I couldn't get back to the wedding. I couldn't explain it to the players. I couldn't, and Stephen couldn't either. So it was disappointing in that sense. And we sort of left the players then. I spoke to a couple of the staff who were there, and it was good for them as a group. You had to sit down together. Mm.
And did you think when you got the call from Stephen that you'd be going with him?
No, I wouldn't. I'd never be that presumptuous. I felt that, and probably still feel that, we were a very, very good team together. I think Stephen is brilliant. He's a brilliant manager. I think I certainly would say what I brought to him helped him be a brilliant manager. And what he brought to me helped me be a brilliant coach. So I believe we were just a good team together. But I wasn't presumptuous in any way, shape or form. But very, very clear in that conversation, or very early in the conversation, Stephen made it clear that it just wasn't going to happen, and for various reasons. So I knew where I stood very clearly at that stage.
Were you disappointed? Or?
Yeah, naturally I would have been disappointed at the time, because I would have had the same ambitions as Stephen. So in my position, I feel that over those sort of last 5 or 6 seasons, I would have played a certain role in terms of Dundalk's success. Stephen has got the job on the back of Dundalk's success, so yeah, I was disappointed. But at the same time, it was very clear to me from within an hour of that conversation that I'd had contact from America to say, we want you very central to everything that's gone forward in Dundalk, which was a huge sort of vote of confidence. And it probably would have cost the FEI a bit of money to get me out of my contract. I had just signed a new full-time contract. So I understood the situation I was in. So for me, I moved on fairly quickly. But it'd be wrong to say I wasn't disappointed. I felt I had done enough to be part of that next move as well. Yeah.
People, I guess, need to be selfish in these roles, and when opportunities come up, like, did you think, and I don't know if you'd ever had this conversation as to what might come next, did you feel that you would have always been a team, or was there always the possibility that Stephen was front of house and that?
In football, anything can happen, but like, I think when you're involved in football, and whether it's under 8, under 12, 14, you always dream, like, so when there was talk of Stephen Kenny becoming the next manager, I dreamed of becoming the next, and I probably wouldn't have got the assistant manager's role. That would have been somebody with a bigger name. Mm. But I did have visions of standing at a European championship. I did have visions of going to a World Cup with him, and, you know, that I'd be telling lies if I said that wasn't what I dreamed or what I thought of. Or when I was on the treadmill, when your mind goes and you daydream, I would have thought of that around that time. But
was there a chance to plead your case, or was it that sort of situation?
No, it wasn't that situation anyway, shape or form. As I said, I'd moved on. Like in my position as assistant manager, I was very, very close to the player. So within that sort of window, my first thought was, how do I relay this to the players? How do I tell them that there's no sort of, we won't have, you know, this train is not going to break. And straight away I switched on to, I've got to look after the players.
That must have been a very difficult day for you then, because on one hand, like there's, as you say, there is a disappointment there that maybe this opportunity hasn't gone the way you thought it would. But another opportunity has opened itself up that you're going to be able to take charge of this team for the coming years. And the first impression you now make as the new manager, the new head coach, is pretty important.
Yeah, I think there wasn't a sense of disappointment. I didn't feel let down. I didn't feel any of that stuff. Because there was none of that. When you work with Stephen Kenny, you become so loyal to him that, first of all, it was a bit emotional for both of us. I was full of joy for him and his family and everything that came with it. For me, then I had to switch. I've always been that person, the link between the players and Stephen, or just being the player's sort of friend, for want of a better word, or someone they could rely on. So, listen, it was one of them things. I knew very quickly that I was going to be central to what was happening in the club going forward. I felt I was always central to it over the last 6 or 7 years anyway, again, under the stewardship of Stephen. So it was one of them situations where you just move on very quickly. It'd be wrong to say I was disappointed. I think I was, because I had dreamed of going to European Championships, I still dreamed of going to a World Cup. Anyone that's involved with football doesn't dream of going to a World Cup. They're not in the right planet.
And hey, who knows how the next couple of years plan out with the Irish team.
Challenge, yes.
Do you still have a relationship now then? Like, is he someone you can lean on for a bit of advice, or did you need a bit of a clean break and
no,
be your own man?
I think when you work so closely with someone for six and a half years, and before that I played under him, he gave me a break in League of Ireland. I'd worked him when he was at Derry. I'd done a lot of work for him. I would say to you that we have a very, very good relationship. He is one of the closest people to me in life, so I don't see that changing. We don't talk every day the way we used to, but at the same time, it'd be regularly contact between us. Yeah,
you've got to get used to any fixture congestion now as well, caused by these under-21 call-ups and senior call-ups.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's on the other side.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, he does wear an FAI cap so that's fine. I've no issue with that. But listen, we're certainly not going to complain about these fixtures. We're not going to, that's not what we do. But the problem with the fixtures is very clear for me that, one, there is a risk of injuries for everybody in the league, and we're probably better equipped, some of the teams at the higher end are better equipped to deal with that. But the problem is the quality of the games is going to suffer. 10 games and sort of 34, 35 days is just not good enough. A game every 3 days is not going to lead to a good game. We played Shamrock Rovers
a couple
of weeks back. And to be honest with you, two really good sides who were tired. It was the fourth game in 14 days, and we at the start of the season, and they weren't ready. There has been an argument that they do this in the Championship, but I think that's slightly different because of the resources that are available to Championship clubs. We're behind in resources and in squad sizes, but
yeah, it's ridiculously front-loaded, the season.
Yeah, and look, I understand the FAI aren't in a difficult position because they have to protect teams in Europe. And when you go up a level in Europe, you do need a week lead into games. It's just, if you want our teams to be successful in Europe, you've got to give that. But at this stage, I think the clubs are so stable. I think extending the league and making it longer is very, very... we're no longer clubs really struggling to pay wages. I think a lot of clubs are in a good place now. The league needs to be longer, and that, I think that will improve the quality of games. We've seen huge crowds turning up. We were in the Brandywell last week, and it was just a joy to be in. It was a good stadium, a good crowd, and it was a good game because both teams had a week to build into it. It was really a smashing game of football. So I think they just need to be cleverer in how they manage these fixtures.
I was out with Stephen Kenny yesterday. We're going to play the interview out on Saturday's show, and like it's refreshing sitting with him and listening to him talk about tactics and his philosophy on the game, and happy friend, and you could see the excitement in his face that working with Caoimhín Kelleher and Kevin Bazunu on their ability as goalkeepers with the football at their feet, and you can see his mind working hard and how he can start plotting the future with these guys over the next few years. You have a very similar style then. You have very similar thoughts on the game. To get that across to players, though, that you're now in charge with your style, like, do you say to them, nothing's changing here, we're going to do exactly what we've done for the last 5, 6, 7 years? Or do you, did you, like, how do you make sure that players know
To be honest, it was a perfect storm in terms of on the 6th of January, when the players came in, there was a new management team in front of them. It was a perfect storm. I'd been working in the background and we've a centre of excellence now. The club have spent close to £500,000 on new changing rooms for the players, the new gym, there's a video analyst room, there's a canteen for the players in the morning. So when they arrived, they moved into a new building. Mm. Okay, so we were able to change things and we were able to improve different bits and pieces. We hired a dietitian into the club that wasn't there previously, and we're constantly, and that would have happened under Stephen anyway, but we're constantly adding to where we've been, and we've done that over the sort of 6 years. So it was a perfect storm for us to say, when the players came back, this is the new way, but it's the same way with just improved ideas, and we've always improved things over the last 6 years, and we've always been open to. There's a lot of talk of Instat at the moment. We've been using Instat for 3 years. We've been sort of, I could nearly coach the coaches how to use it in the league now. And it's great that Instat has come into a league. We've been ahead of the game there. So our job and my job is to do whatever's next to stay ahead of the game in terms of whether it's a dietitian or whatever that little edge may be. And I think it was a perfect storm. The club really, the owners really backed us. They put this building together for us. We move into a new building and players see everything has improved. So I think it's just a perfect storm for us.
Is it very simple for you taking over that winning the league is a must?
I think winning the league at a club like Dundalk is the number one goal, but also improvement in Europe has always been something that we're focused on. Europe is really on the players' mind. Mm. They felt they didn't do themselves justice last year, and it's an area we're looking to improve in. So league and Europe are no different. They're really targets of the whole group.
Yeah, and you all took a lot of pride in the way you approached Europe previously, and that the success came without really changing tactics or style, that actually you were going to go out and try and play football. You weren't going to sit back and let the opposition dominate possession. Is that the way forward, do you think, for this year in Europe, for the coming years? Do you need to add another level of pragmatism? Like, what did you learn from last year's European disappointments?
Look, we got a couple of things wrong last year in terms of that game and away, and we probably ran out a little bit of luck in the sense of we'd a couple of players out of form, we'd a couple of players coming back from injury, and we probably had no choice, but we picked the wrong team because there was a couple of guys just not in that right moment. But in league games, I mean, we regularly keep possession over 60%, okay? So, for example, you know, you can't say to a player 9 days in a row, we want you to pass, 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 press, 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 and then turn into another game just because it's your own goal. Don't press today, don't pass today. It doesn't work. You have to have a belief, you have to stick with it, and you have to sort of back yourself on it. And it's something we've done over the last sort of 6 years, as I keep saying. But I don't think we need to get away from that. The players won't want to get away from that. So, you know, we will continue to do the same things and believe we're doing them the right way. Every so often, like what happened to us last year, we'll get caught out. But I'd rather fail trying to do things the right way than hanging in and sort of looking for a miraculous result. It's just not going to happen regularly enough.
Jack Byrne is obviously flavour of the month at the moment, and deservedly so. Played pretty well, I thought, in that draw with Dundalk in the first half, managed to get himself involved, and you probably curtailed it a bit as the game went on, but was obviously exceptional in front of Mick McCarthy against Sligo last week. You've got a lot of talented players as well, though. Like Michael Duffy is somebody who seemed at the end of Martin O'Neill's time was somebody he was considering, and getting somebody like Patrick McElhaney back as well from Oldham. You have a lot of talented players to work with there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's fantastic for Jack Bourne. As someone who's been in and around the league for the last 25 years, it's sort of stuff like what Jack has done, what Stephen Kenny has done, fills me with pride, okay? Really, really proud. Do I believe we have players who could be internationals? Absolutely. Michael O'Connor switched his allegiance from Northern Ireland to Republic, or Michael Duffy switched his allegiance to Republic of Ireland. Do I believe yes, do. Mick hasn't seen us live, okay, since he's taken over. So in time, I'd like to think he will see what we have to offer. I believe some of our players are more than capable.
Can you do anything about that? Or has that just tended to be sort of potluck as to what games Mick turns up at?
Well, I mean, ultimately, that's his job. Like, and I must very much say, I've met Mick now, I think, on three different occasions, between the pro licence, between at the RT Sports Awards, and he's been outstanding to me. He just was just one of the nicest guys I've ever met in football. So he's just a brilliant person and very positive, and someone who I can understand why. I've spoken to Richard actually only today about him to say, you know, you can see why people want to play.
Going to ask that actually, because I know there was a frustration probably in certain League of Ireland circles that week when the decision was been made about maybe the way Stephen Kenny was been spoken about and the way Mick McCarthy, because so many ex-players in the media played under Mick McCarthy and they all rave about him. They did in this studio, like Gary Breen and Kevin Coban can't speak highly enough, whereas they just wouldn't know Stephen in the same way. And it ended up into a sort of one or the other, and would Stephen be respected in the dressing room? Or actually, now having met Mick McCarthy, you can kind of see why people speak about him so well.
Yeah, and I understand that. I mean, and the challenge, I suppose the challenge for us all is to, and for Stephen or whoever it is, like, if Stephen was in, had achieved with a club from Slovakia what he did with Dundalk, he would be Slovakia national team manager, okay? We use barometers of what people, we use England as a barometer, and we need to get away from that. People from England are struggling to play in the Premiership at this stage, you know, because of it's such an international league. I have no doubt Stephen would be more than capable to hold his own in any dressing room. He'd inspire players. He'd make them want to play for him. He brought a side to, you know, Zenit St. Petersburg. Someone like Witzel was playing as a number six that day. There was Giuliano, Brazilian international. Christoph was playing fullback for Italy at the time. And he went there with no fear. He went there, he made sure his team passed the ball and played. I've no doubt he'd do the same thing with Ireland. I think he'd give the players the belief to be able to do that. And as a nation, if you listen to social media, if you read all of this, that's what we want. So I don't think it'd take long for him to convince the players, you know, he can help them do that. And go to, whether it's going to Russia or whether it's going to Sweden or wherever the game may be, I think he has the ability to do that. But at the same time, I've been so impressed with Mick since he's taken over. That I can understand why people like Kevin, would speak, Richard speaks so highly of him, because, again, I see the two of them, different characters, but at the same time, the same people in terms of getting the best out players.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for coming in the studio, Vinny. You're getting a bit of a break this week, are you?
Yeah, handy week. I'd rather play, but at the same time, we'll get a week off, and we're back on pro licence duty next week, so that'll be an interesting week again.
All right, we'll enjoy that. Thanks a lot for coming in the studio. We'll take a quick break.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.